Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
This is the Funny Mummies podcast, the podcast for people that hate parenting podcasts. I'm Patty Ashdown, comedian, writer, actress, and mother to two very lively boys. Each show, I'm joined by funny mummies from the world of comedy, arts, and everyone who can help us in this crazy world of parenting. So settle in as we find the funny side of parenting and being bloody great women. Welcome to the Funny Mummies podcast, part of the Other Woman Show on Soho Radio. This is series two of Check In on the Lock In as we catch up with some of our favourite funny mummies to see how they are coping. But how are you? We are now recording this in mid-June 2020 of the COVID-19 pandemic. I feel like a futuristic person now. Still living in a semi-lockdown state here in the UK. Not at all if you're the spitting, snogging teenagers at the end of my road. I don't even, I'll tell you what happened the other day. I don't even know myself anymore. As recently, out on a walk with my two very energetic boys who like to play, oh my God, they like to play hide and seek in the voice. Is there anything more terrifying with two young children under four? Yes, I'll close my eyes as you go missing. Anyway, as we walked past, about five lads who I would say was about 16, 17, walked past and dropped litter on purpose. And I said politely, excuse me, I think you've dropped something. I have never felt simultaneously more alive and old. just side note, they did not pick it up and gave me a lot of back chat. So what is this new courage that I have? Am I wanting to get in onto the new normal, come out of my lockdown hideaway and enter this new world? My therapist shared this. I know we all have bloody therapists. She shared this theory with me that she couldn't tell me where it would come from, but I'm just saying it's a theory on the process of crisis has three modes. One, emergency, which as in pull up your sleeves, do Joe Wicks, bake, jog. The middle, regression. Depressed, tired, lost sense of purpose, has watched all of Netflix. Recovery, revise our goals, expectations, move beyond us getting by and building our own pub in the front garden. So I asked my panel today, are we ready for the new normal for the recovery? So first up, please welcome my team today. First up, she'd rather a game of Sudoku than sex games, unless it's the guy from the new normal. She's my pull yourself together, Hattie, my moniker to my Rachel. It's Gemma Beagley.
Yay.
And next is it's our first time to Funny Mummies. It's taken a pandemic to get her. She's an award-winning comedian. She's trapped. She's got no other choice. Actor and mum of three. She left banking to become a comedian. You would know her from her infamous appearance on Live the Apollo with some of the most shared clips about how we discipline our children in the UK. A regular on many Radio 4 panel shows. She also wrote and starred in her own Sky Arts sitcom. I'm very excited to welcome Sindhu V.
Hello. Oh. How fun is this?
I know, I need a sip of tea now.
Oh, you're drinking tea?
Yeah, if you catch her on a Friday, Sindhu, it wouldn't be a tea.
I will tell you behind this, for anyone who doesn't know, obviously we are not all together. We are on Zoom. And I would say behind this is a glass of gin and tonic.
Oh, good. No,
it's not like how it goes. It's there. It depends on how well this podcast goes. But then if it goes really well, I want it. And if it goes badly, I want it. So when I say badly, it never goes badly. But if it goes intense.
Intense. No, I've committed to one alcoholic beverage a day.
Oh, you've committed?
I've committed. I was like, all right, straight up, that's what it's going to be. Even if I don't feel like I'm going to drink the drink.
Right, first thing in the morning or?
No. It's always it's always around between 6 and 7 in the evening.
Okay. Right, before, because this might come up, we have it's a very serious quick fire round.
Okay, let's
do
it.
Just to get to know our guests.
All right.
And don't think too much about your answers, just say your first answer. So, dogs or cats?
Dogs.
Baking or cooking? You know what I mean by that, yeah.
Baking.
Date night or girls' night?
Oh, girls' night.
I'm gonna cause a divorce. Teething or homeschooling?
Oh, homeschooling, 100,000,000%.
You'd rather homeschool than teeth, than go through teething.
Yeah, because the teething, you can't do anything. But homeschooling, you say, if you get up from this desk before you finish your math, you see what I do to you. That's it, they sit there and do the math. Teething, you can't
say anything. Welcome to the show, Cindy V. No, it's true. It's just...
You have more control over homeschooling. Okay, you could do it the other way. You could do it the way my Danish husband does it. Oh, yeah. If you finish this, you'll get Nutella and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, he does the bribery.
Well, yeah, of course. It's all very nice and happy all the time. Either way, you can control outcomes. With teething, you just got to hold the baby.
Yeah. It just goes on. I know. I mean, mine's...
They cry. And I used to cry. Because I'd be tired and I was feeling bad for them. So I would cry. And then I would call my mom and say, the baby's crying. And I'm crying. And she'd say, oh, just shut up. Give the baby one clove in a whiskey. I'll be like, okay, I'll call you later. Because cloves. So, you know, then you just, there's nothing you can do.
Oh, God. All the advice about teething. Oh, God. I want to get all into teething now. But we need to, we'll get...
Rapid fire. Are we done with rapid fire or is there more?
Rapid fire. Oh, the quick fire round. Yeah, that's it. I could have written, you were so good and so fast. I was like, I should have written a lot down. So how is your lockdown? Before we go into what mode you're in. So did you like my 3 stages of crisis that I found out about?
I did. I certainly can see how that has been, you know, that's the narrative of lockdown. Mm. But I think also depends what your lockdown has been. I had very serious corona in March.
Oh, so at the I was going to say, so at the beginning, so then it wouldn't be pull up your sleeves and get on with it. Oh, God.
No, it wasn't. I got it very early. I got it 18th of March, right? And I got it and it was very bad. It was 16 very intense days and not good days. But what happened, so early March, so the lockdown was like the 21st. I was out of commission from the 18th. Yeah. On the 2nd of April, I emerged. And I emerged like, hey, guys, how is everyone? Yay. And everyone had been in lockdown. They were like, why the fuck are you so happy? And I was like, what? It's so great. Look, we don't have to be anywhere. Because I had been sick for 16 days. I hadn't come downstairs.
Right.
For 12 of those days. So I think lockdown.
And you were just, because I had it as well, Sindhu, but and you did feel like, so you just appreciate the air and the sun and everything. You're just happy to be alive.
Yeah. I mean, I had it like, I don't know how you had it, but I had a temperature every day and I had very bad body ache, but then
body ache is
I had 4 days of breathing issues.
Oh, gosh.
And no, I don't have asthma, so I don't even, I'm not ready to not be able to draw breath.
That must have been like, frightening.
That was not cool. That was, and it came, it was day 12, 13, 14, 15.
Oh God, right, okay.
And so I think the point is that my lockdown was sort of emergency and then celebration. And when you have so much celebration from, oh yeah, I feel the sunshine, you know, blah, blah, blah. I think this thing is better. I also, by the way, reached my target weight. Oh. I've been trying for 5 years because I didn't eat. And so I was like, oh my God, I'm finally this weight. I was only there for a week, but I rejoiced.
Oh, because, I
couldn't eat. I just couldn't.
Did you have?
Because I had no smell and no taste.
Yeah, no taste. And I felt nauseous because some people, that is another symptom. Some people have, not everyone, but I did have, it reminded me of having morning sickness. It's horrible.
Yeah, I had a lot of stomach gut issues.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was either throwing up or the other way, or the whole thing was a disaster.
It's not pretty.
It's Do you know where you got it from, Sindhu? Do you?
I had been in South Africa till the 9th of March. I flew back. You know, I've been traveling around. Could have been anywhere. You know, how can you know where you get it?
Yeah.
No,
I mean, because some people said, oh, I got it from. No, not in saying like, oh, my husband or what, no, my mom.
Because my husband got it after me. And so obviously he got it from me because I was stumbling around the house being very COVID-y. Where did I get it? No one in my house had it. And then I
think if it's before lockdown, it's hard to
yes, and it was
okay. Like, whereas I got it lockdown. In lockdown, so, and I was the only one going out to the shops, so it must have been the shops.
Yeah.
Blooming.
Yeah, but
I blame Tesco's.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, this is the kind of, it's so contagious.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, and I mean, I have to be honest, the way that not having anyone checked at Heathrow, I honestly think I got it somehow on an international flight in March. Okay. And either at the airport, either it was, you know, whatever. But the thing is, there was, like, if you look at the countries where they contained it, they just closed borders. They made you wear masks. They didn't.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say it's the government's fault. Sorry, but it is, you know, they should have shut
down. They just handled it in a very peculiar way where they were like, we don't really think anything is happening, but please stay alert to if it is.
Yeah. Like, it is bizarre. It's kind of like, right, you're now in lockdown, except for supermarkets, petrol stations, bike shops, off-license it. And it's just like, so what? Is this a lockdown or
and
not?
And also, there's been no legal requirement to wear a mask, which is insane. And now there is. And it's like, we've all had it.
Public transport.
Like in India, in America, you have to wear a mask if you leave your house. Makes a massive difference, even in places like Massachusetts, in Boston, where they don't really have a lot of it. Everyone has to wear a mask when they go out. It cuts the stuff by so much. Here it was like, mask if you feel like.
are you moonwalking around? Do you feel like a survivor and that you can just do anything you want now? Do you feel like you're immune?
Invincible.
Well, I don't know how you felt, Hattie, but for the longest time after, this thing had a very long tail. So I was exhausted for so long.
Yeah.
After I didn't.
You were hats, weren't you?
Yeah, I think I was in bed, like actual bed, only for probably about 5 days. And then other times just like on the sofa and stuff and then trying to get back to stuff.
Yes.
But then my friend who had it, she... like it come and go because the doctor saying to her, you're not resting enough.
Yeah, she didn't.
She's a bloody workaholic, and she's a doer-aholic. She can't stop doing stuff. And so I was listening to her and I was like telling my husband, I've got to rest.
Yeah.
So but yeah, and then afterwards, yeah, I'll be honest, like I was the typical, like at the beginning, pulling up my sleeves, like we can do this, Joe Wicks every day. I was just getting fit and everything. And then I did that. And then I've got to be honest, I mean, when did I get it? Mid-April? And I have not done any real exercise since then because I'm so unfit now because you're just laying around doing nothing for nearly 3 weeks.
Exactly.
So, like my tissue wastage.
I mean, that's what it is. I think, you know, is that I didn't really get out and think I was invincible because I'd been so unwell. I didn't want to relapse. And I knew that it had so much to do with your immune system. So I just, you know, it was like those Victorian novels where people used to go to places with bath salts to convalesce from typhoid. That's how I behaved. You know, I just behaved like I was convalescing from some, from consumption.
Yeah.
By the way, when I was young, I would read these English novels and I was living in India and some lady would have wasted away with consumption. And
you were like, what is that?
And I think it turned out it's just like typhoid.
It's TB, no?
Oh, it's tuberculosis.
Yeah.
Which in India we just call TB. Because the English came and said, you all have TB. They didn't say you all have consumption.
Right.
The ladies in these English novels were always dying. And you know what I used to think? I thought, because I was very young, I used to think they had died of overeating. They just
consumption of consuming.
But then it was so weird because they were always very frail. And I was like, why would you be frail if you ate all the cake and then died from it? Like, why?
Yeah.
You know, when you're young as a kid and you're not asking grown-ups, you read stuff. you just make whatever sense of it, like those words that you were pronouncing in your head.
Mm.
And then one day someone says them out loud and you're like, oh, that's how it's said.
Yeah.
You know, that was me, the first three Harry Potters, Hermione. Hermione.
Hermione,
yeah. I was like,
Hermione, yeah. I mean, who
and
do
I remember being about six and going around and calling everything pregnant.
What?
That's pregnant, isn't it? That's pregnant.
Pregnant?
I don't know what I was trying to... Yeah, that's pregnant. Like, it was a... Oh, that's nice.
Where did you get that from?
It's a bit pregnant. I don't think you heard someone saying that they were pregnant. And so I thought, oh, that they're...
Oh, they're very nice. So this
very nice. Is that... Yeah.
What a pregnant biscuit. Did you have a word? Said like that was...
No, like I must have had, but I mean, at the moment, my son, I'm embarrassed to say, like Gemma's son, over this lockdown, I'd got really good with the YouTube activity, usage, shall we say, but in lockdown, it's just went out the window a bit. It's got a bit better. I mean, he's on a timer, but he loves the YouTube and he loves watching the unboxing of the toys. That's what they love. But I have to say, he's now gone on to just sort of watching these ones where it's like families playing games and stuff. And anyway, he watches this one that's called, I'm not going to give them any more advertisement because they bloody annoy me. But one of the words in the title is hobby, or as they say, hobby.
So hobby. They're all Americans. What is going on with this?
Now my son says hubby in hubby, and we keep saying it's hobby, but then we realize he doesn't realize that's the same word, so he just thinks certain things are hobbies. Yeah, hubby.
Alistair today was talking about Aquaman.
What's that?
Aquaman. It's Americans.
Aquaman. So
that's what you're saying, okra.
Yeah. Is that what you want, the green long vegetable? A man made of green long vegetables? But it's funny, this whole YouTube thing with the little kids. I mean, they just want to watch they want to watch people mixing paints. And then...
Well, to be fair, Sindhu, I sat in bed watching earwax extractions for about half an hour the other
day. Are you kidding me?
Oh, you're one of them.
Oh, it's good.
What? On like YouTube?
That's disgusting.
No, it is, but it's not. It's really
I've got
satisfying.
Family members, Sindhu, that do it with spots.
Okay. Oh no, not spots.
I know,
they watch people squeezing spots.
Don't mind squeezing my own spots. I even do get a satisfaction sometimes when a big Mars bar falls out of your ear. You're like, oh my god, I just lost 2 kilos right there. You know, sometimes when you have a Q-tip and you're just like really giving it, and then suddenly and you can hear it, and you're like, oh shit, that's fine, but I'm not watching other people do that. Okay, no. I'm not doing it.
I can't watch, but I like my own spot, and
is there anything more satisfying than seeing a blackhead than going like this and the whole blackhead comes out and you're like, I mean, I literally feel the kind of satisfaction that I would feel if I can't even think.
Are you going to say orgasm?
You can't think of anything more satisfying.
I can't think of anything more satisfying. I'm like, no, that's about it.
Becoming a mother.
When you become a mom, like you're present, but you're really not that much in control. There's a lot going on. And I, of course, elected to have as many drugs as I was allowed.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. I was like, well, please, whatever. And also, my entire child birthing experience was very much counseled by my mother, who had arrived. And in India, it's something that girls do with their mothers and their aunts. And so it's a very female thing. And it's typically with women who've been through it.
Greek culture's like that as well. My friend's Greek.
So she'd come and she said, she thought the idea that having a natural birth made you closer to your baby. She was like, no. That was it. She said,
just not.
No. So, okay. And also it's like, well, obviously if your mother's like, don't take the pain, why would you want to take the pain? Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
She was always of the view that you are the mother and full stop.
Yeah.
You don't have to try hard to be close to your kid. What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah. Hmm.
And so, and also she said, if you ask the women in the village, because my grandmother and all, were in the village, she said, if you gave them the choice, they would take the medicine. Do you know how fucking painful this shit is?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know what you put it? It is funny, like, isn't it? Well, I wouldn't.
And then
yeah.
She said to me, "Foreigner, Jyoti." You know, my mom called all white people foreigners. Okay, which is because what happened is when she was growing up and the British were in India, the British called non-British people foreigners.
Right.
In India.
In India.
So, yeah. So when Indians heard that, they thought, oh, people that are not like us are foreigners.
Makes sense.
Are foreigners. But my mother used to come to England and say to my friends, you know, people who are foreigners like you, my English friends would be like, who is, what are you, like, it was such a mind fuck for them because they were like, how am I the foreigner? My mother would say, but so for her, foreigner was like white people, right?
Right.
Or like not Indians, right? But actually it was exclusively Europeans and Americans, white people, foreigners or white people, because she would never call a Bangladeshi a foreigner.
Okay.
You know, called him a Bangladeshi, but yeah. All white. So she used to say to me, white women have this obsession with natural birth because they have a choice.
Right. Yeah.
God, that's deep.
And she used to say that. She used to say, it's fine because it's their choice and they have the choice, so they're going for it. She said, if you take away choice, no woman is choosing pain. They're just not choosing it. They're just not choosing it. They're like, nope, no, thank you. Nope, 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 nope.
I think it's just that you think, because you hear these stories, you hear that some people are just like these unicorn type women and they don't feel the pain and they actually enjoy it.
Just fart it out.
I know of two mums that have, I wouldn't say they didn't feel pain, but put it like this, one of them said, oh, when it got to the head bit, it was a bit ouchy. I was like, you're very lucky.
Or you have a massive, massive pussy. I mean, what else can, what other reason can there possibly, you have some elastic business going on. It's not possible. I mean, just from the law of physics, you know?
I think some, well, I apparently think, we're meant to release natural endorphins. And another friend of mine had that. She said she felt like she was on drugs. Like,
no, I was on drugs, but I have never felt more powerful and overjoyed than when I had my babies. But that doesn't mean it was easy.
No, no.
And also, even if you do have, I mean, I don't know what it's like to have, to not have an epidural, but even with an epidural, you're still pushing and you're exhausted.
Yeah.
I mean, you're still pushing out a very, this big thing from a, this big thing. I mean, it's just physics.
Yeah.
I don't remember the pain. It's just the tiredness. It was just how much energy. It was just the amount of energy.
That's what I remember. You're exhausted.
There's all kinds of things going on and, yeah. And I mean, I think with the first one's always very intense. Oh my God. You know, the first one, you're like, what the hell is happening? And you're not, I wasn't unhappy. And I had a relatively easy birth. It didn't take long. Like at 7 in the morning, I was like, oh, I think I have some pain. And then he was born at 10:30.
Oh, that is good.
Yeah. It was fine. And I mean, and I was, you know, I was working up until very recent, until right up to the time he was born, more or less. And then the other two, I mean, two and three are, two is easy. Three is literally falling out. You're holding your crotch, running to the car.
Yeah.
You're literally holding your crotch and just running to the car. Like
pelvic floors as you're talking about this.
Well, don't even talk to me about pelvic floors. I mean, sometimes I think if there was anything got loose, my kidney would fall out. I just wouldn't even know. I'd be like, oh shit, my kidney fell out. I mean, I've done not that many pelvic exercises. The whole thing's a disaster. And you know what? Look, can I just say, and this is a mummy's kind of, this is a parenting, I think the amount of pressure on women to have children if they want, to have jobs, have tight pussies afterwards, have this, have that, and this, it's impossible.
Yeah.
Do you know, the amount of focus it takes to write one episode of a TV show, it's intense focus. And then I have to think about my pelvic floor. What? Yeah. I, what are you talking about? You know what I mean? I feel like you can either have great pelvic floor muscles or do other stuff well. I don't, or you can be taking a break from other stuff well and then be driving your car and doing the, you know, where you can do it like hold, like you're peeing and then release and then hold. That's a pelvic floor muscle thing, right? you can do that. But if I have to write a screenplay or I'm not thinking 10 seconds, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, while pretending I'm holding in my pee. What? No, I'm thinking about the dialogue. It's too much.
Get a tenner lady. It's not worth it.
Or just flap around. Flap around. Everything's all over the shop. Fine. You know what? Or get surgery later if you have to. But I just think the onus on us to be so disciplined within an inch of our lives.
Yeah.
I'm trying to do intermittent fasting, by which I mean I'm failing.
I was doing it as well.
I'm failing so badly.
When did you start?
Which time? The only thing I've failed more at is trying to stop smoking, which I finally did after 10 years, two years ago. Done. So,
wow.
Yeah. But the thing is, you know, and I was thinking, why am I doing it? Oh, because it's good for your organs. You know,
you're going to live longer. That's what they say.
Okay. So you're good for your organs. You're going to live longer. Then you got to do the pelvic floor exercise. Blah, and then can you please also write an award-winning show? No. I'm going to try for the award-winning show and eat cookies. Not all the cookies, but some cookies.
What do you find that? I mean,
I started my fast at 8 and I didn't put, I have an app now.
Yeah, so do I. Is it called Fastic?
No, Zero.
Oh, another one.
It's called
Zero. It's accounting software, isn't it, Cindy? You're sure you're not getting it mixed up? That's probably why you're failing.
You're listening to the Funny Mummies podcast in association with Screaming with Laughter, the lunchtime comedy club where babies can come to.
I'll tell you something. One of the things I've learned in lockdown, which I'm going to take with me, which I'm going to keep with me, which I think is going to help me come out of lockdown feeling like something good happened.
Okay.
Is I've decided to pick one thing for my physical health, one thing for my mental health, that is something I have to do. Like, you know, people go for, like they do working out or they do intermittent fasting, whatever. One thing. So by which I mean, if I'm doing weights every day, I'm not going to give myself shit for not doing pelvic floor. I can't do them all.
Right.
You see, so I'm going to pick one thing.
Okay. I like that.
There's one for my looks, because all women are thinking about that, right? One thing I will do every single day that I think is positively affecting my appearance in a way that I care about. Mm-hmm. My facial appearance. One for my health, physical health. One for my mental health. By mental health, I don't mean, it could be anything. But I've just said one a day, and I'm going to stick with it. But I'm not going to do the other things. You know, like what I'm trying to say is people say, I do facials, and I'm also taking care of my pelvic floor, and then I work out. I eat lettuce. Fuck off, please. I cannot do all the things.
So it's about not putting too much pressure.
Well, but it's about making sure you do one thing well.
At least one.
Because I think the thing that matters when you have children and when there is a part of your system, your entire system, that is always on alert and awake in a manner of speaking.
Well, because you're a permanent PA, aren't you? You're a permanent PA for your kids.
Well, and you're responsible for them. Mm. You know, as much as I would like my kid to never have to do school, I have to be involved now, right? Things like this. So you're not completely even available to yourself. So when you can achieve small things, like even if you achieve one thing a day in each area, it's a huge positive benefit. Do you remember when your kids were really young and you'd be like, if today I can get to the park? Do you remember those days when they were
so young? Yes.
Where you thought, if I could get up and just, you know, get the right breakfast in myself and in this kid and just get to the park before it's time for a feed or I'm too exhausted or the kid is screaming. Those days, especially when you have two little ones. I had, you know, I had a newborn and a two-year-old.
I was going to say, your first two, we said this off air, didn't we? That
I have two teenagers.
So they're 18 and 16. Yeah. So yeah, really, they're closer. Okay.
Yeah, so really, those days, so then you would feel such a sense of elation by the time you could go to the supermarket, get something with the baby, have had no meltdowns, neither you nor the baby, you know, and come home and actually made pasta. I remember those days were like, And it was like November.
And was those days, was that when you were working in the city, with a banker then?
Well, by the time I had the second, I'd stopped working. Because I was at home full time. So
yeah.
It was, yeah, I mean, I was at home. I basically went back after I had my first kid. And then I got unwell, by which I mean I went fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Like proper cuckoos. Too much
postnatal
pressure.
Depression or
I don't think it was postnatal, because postnatal I was fine. It was like a year and a half later.
Well,
I think it was the pressure. I think fundamentally I was not,
I mean, this after your second one, you say?
After my first one. So it wasn't a year, it was like a year and a half after the pregnancy. So I went back, let me think. I went back when my first child was 7 months old.
Mm.
And I lasted not very long.
Yeah.
But when I went back, I had been fine. Here's what happened to me. I really was not willing to accept how maternal I was and how much more I cared about being with my baby than I did about work. And my work was not something I had to do, which I was very lucky, but it was my whole identity.
Mm.
And being a mother was not an identity.
Mm.
It was, in my opinion, the way I was raised, coming out of India, where to be able to work and go out and be financially independent and equal to your husband was like, my mother was like, these are big things. You don't drop this to just have a baby.
Right.
I mean, there are a lot of babies in India, you know, it's a billion of us. So that's not considered like, that wasn't the aim.
And had she been a full-time mother? So
my mother had been a full-time mother, but then when I was 16, she'd become a therapist and so on. But in India, when she was a full-time mother, she had help. So yeah. She didn't do shit.
More family around, I guess. Lots of family.
And she had help. In India, at that time, for professionals, it was not unusual to have people at home helping.
Right.
And, so I was pretty much raised by my Aya. Aya is sort of like a nanny, but not posh. And by not posh, I mean she couldn't even speak Hindi. She was from a Nepalese village.
Right.
And so she used to just tie me to her back and do all the housework. And my mother went to teach. So you didn't stay at home to take care of a baby. You went and furthered your career and your brain and so on. So for me, I don't think I was really ready to understand. I didn't understand that. And I just missed my child all the time.
Yeah.
And I judged myself very harshly. I was away. I used to leave the house at 10 to 6 in the morning and come back at 8.
Oh, Sindhu, that is...
I used to miss him. And then and I was like, and oh, but... Yeah, and I used to think it was so lame that I missed him and what was wrong with me. And I had friends who didn't, and friends who got nannies and they didn't miss their kids. And so I really relate to that. So I think what happened is I had a huge, what I think of as, I had a huge, the war of dharma. You know, in Hinduism, we have a notion of dharma, which is, it's hard to translate in English, but you think of it as duty. But mm-hmm. it changes according to context. So it's what's called the right thing to do. But the right thing to do, unlike in the Bible, which is you won't do this and you won't do that. In Hinduism, it's more depending on what's going on, you do this. And depending, so I feel like I fought the war of dharma in my heart so hard that I had a breakdown.
Oh,
well, which, to be honest, if you're not going to learn any other way, then you may as well learn that way. I'm glad I learned. You know, I had to take time off work because they were like, she's had a baby. She's brown. If she fucking melts down on the trading floor, this will be a massive lawsuit. So they were like, why don't you spend some time at home? Which was a nice thing of them to
do.
Mm-hmm. But I wanted to be at home. But of course, then I did stay at home. And at which point I was very unkind to myself. Mm. The world was very nice to me. I was very unkind to myself.
In what way?
I was like, oh, I'm just at home. I couldn't hack it. Look at me, what a loser I am.
Right, yeah, yeah.
You know, and that doesn't help when you have a young baby.
Oh, God, I relate to that.
Yeah, and you're and I was like, you know, and I wasn't as good as the moms that were good at being moms.
Oh, God,
and they pureed the food themselves.
Mm.
I just bought it from like some organic, hip organic. It's to be like, yeah, here, eat this. It's great. Or you know what? Even better, have a banana. What's the problem? But these moms, and then they were already doing baby Einstein with their kids. I remember I took my kid to Harrods because there was a sale on. I mean, that to me was a luxury, to go to Harrods in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
In the middle of the day. I took him there. Meanwhile, all my friends were like, oh, we did Baby Einstein with our kid. I was like, shoot me now. So I think when you're very wedded to your ideas, then you can do yourself a great disservice, because you don't have any compassion for when you feel like behaving a different way than your ideas. You can be very brutal to yourself.
Yeah.
Say, that's not right. What's wrong with you? You know?
So how have you, so how have you learned not to be, because I feel like you're probably not harming yourself now.
Is this hindsight, Cindy? I mean, would you?
Yeah.
I think some of it is hindsight. I mean, I wish I had been kinder to myself then. Mm. Of course, you know, with age, we all learn many things. And with therapy, let's be honest.
Mm.
But so I think now I'm probably a little, I don't know that I'm kinder to myself as much as I am, I know myself better. So I don't have, there's no world in which I would now, let me put it in this way. When I did my first tour, which started in February 2019. It was the first tour, and it was early for a comic, you know, for mm-hmm. me as a comic to go on tour. It was a massive deal.
So fact filing. So when did you start doing comedy then? Because I wasn't quite...
I did my first gig in 2012, May.
Okay.
I didn't really gig again until... I started like between 2012 May and 2014, I did like, I don't know, 30 gigs.
Right.
Because I was like, what is this thing? I mean, I knew I wanted to do it, but I had three kids and they were young.
So how old were they when you got into comedy? How did comedy jump at you?
Well, they were, what were they then? They were 11, 10, 11. The baby was like three.
Okay.
Wow.
So she was little. Also, I didn't have a household setup where I could just fuck off every evening.
Mm.
I didn't know any, everyone was so young. Okay, there were people in comedy where I'm like, how are you awake at this hour? Like, does your mother know you're here? Like, I felt so much older than everybody, you know?
So this is open mic, Cindy. This is like,
it was open mic. And every single gig I did, it was such an acute joy, but I read a lot. And I'd never seen live stand-up when I first did it.
Really? What? Going back to the board. I know it's the boring standard question. Just answer it.
It's on Google. How I got it. I had to do so many interviews on this.
Oh, did you? All right.
It was just one thing. It was through Funny Women, but it was because someone had sent me an email and she was doing a charity gig. She was doing stand up for charity. This is the least fucking funny woman I had met in my life. What the fuck is she doing? Like, whatever charity she's supporting.
So my friend sent you this, just saying, look at this.
An acquaintance. And I thought, this charity is going bust because you're not funny. What is happening? And then I read the email, and at the bottom it said, sponsored by Funny Women, UK. And I was like, what's that? So I clicked on that. So what it was, and my very young children, and this was actually early 2012, and... my husband was traveling, and it said, oh, do you think you're funny? We do Funny Women and comedy. We have these workshops. And it was a Saturday. My parents were visiting. I could hear the children fighting. And the workshop was that day in Leicester Square, downstairs in Leicester Square Theater.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I'm doing nothing right now. And I don't have, I'm just going to go to this thing. They're English. Someone will want to go for a drink. Let's see what this is.
But there must have been, I always find it fascinating because, like, for me, my background is I went to drama college and from an acting background. So that is, you know, that sort of like.
Yeah, no, I had nothing.
So, you know, why did that sing to you rather than a course in gardening or whatever?
You're assuming I didn't do a course in gardening.
Sorry, you did that as well.
I did a course in creative writing, which I left because I was like, I'm bored of this. I did a course in Sanskrit. I tried to go back to my own roots. I was like, why don't I just learn some ancient Indian language? Within two, and it was at SOAS. I was like, oh, fancy school. Two sessions. First of all, it was a night class. Can I just point out? the kind of people that go to Sanskrit night class at SOAS, they have other shit going on in their life that they're not telling you. That's all I want to say. I was the only Indian in the class.
Wow.
There was four of us, and the other three were so scary. I didn't want to talk to them.
No.
I was like, oh, shit. And then the teacher said something about, you know, and of course they don't write in Devanagari. They write in English. So I was like, ugh. So I didn't do that. Then I decided to join City University to do a course on like how to raise money for charity, like how to work in the charity sector.
Okay.
I didn't send the application on the date.
I don't know why I'm laughing.
No, it is funny because I didn't send the application on the date. You want to know why I didn't send the application on the date?
Why?
Because my cousin was engaged, started cheating on her fiance, right? In India. And I was the only one that knew. And I had to go to India to explain to her that if this shit went on any longer, then the whole family would know. And then that would be, what a shame. So that was the week I went to India and I completely forgot about the application. And they were like, well, you can't apply now, you got to apply
next
year.
Well, thank God for that affair, really, because otherwise we would have lost you to the charity sector.
You're listening to the Funny Mummies podcast in association with Screaming With Laughter, the lunchtime comedy club where babies can come too.
No, I tried so many things because I was looking for my identity again.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, my identity again. I was looking for, I wanted to be a mother and myself. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I didn't want to just be someone who stayed at home being a mother. And then what?
And is that what you, I mean, I don't want to be the person that you know, please, you went back to work, but like, what were you doing in that time?
When I was at home?
Yeah.
Literally taking care of these kids.
Taking care of the kids, yeah.
No, I mean, first of all, I was not doing that much. That was like, okay, let me be very frank with you. Let me be frank and take off my pants. That's a joke about Ronald Reagan. But anyway, but it's what Nancy Reagan, because she was having an affair with Frank Sinatra. But anyway, you can edit this out. So... Here's what I was doing. I had two kids. I was at home with them. My husband traveled all the time. So it's a little bit like being a single parent.
Oh, that's tough.
Finance and he was away. But it's not a single parent in an emotional way. It's,
no.
Practical way.
I was getting used to being in a cross-cultural marriage with kids.
Yeah.
I was getting to know my in-laws very well because they would visit a lot. I was, you know, I don't know if this will make sense to anyone else, but I had responsibilities and roles to fulfill towards my parents, my wider family. I was doing that. I was going and waiting outside school and walking back from school and doing homework and then getting them ready for bed or whatever, and then waiting for my husband. And then in the middle, in the daytime when they were at school, I think apart from the logistics of what you do, you know, because you think, oh, my kids are at school all day. For a long time, they're at school from 10 to 2, you know.
Oh, it soon comes round before you know you've got to go and pick them up again.
Yeah, but I, you know, I think I was just floating, you know? And I think that really bothered me. I'd never been in a situation where I didn't have something to do. And I mean, you could say, well, why didn't you do something? Well, I think part of it is that to raise your child, if I had stayed in banking, see, if you think of banking as my culture, in the West, it was my culture. Then if I'd hired someone to help me with the kids, I'd be most of the time immersed in my culture, then come home and be with my kids, right? I had to now change my culture from banking to English mother world. And I was like, what the fuck is this? I hadn't signed up for it. I didn't have a lot of friends in it. I didn't really understand it that well. I didn't agree with a lot of it.
Okay.
I found the school system very strange, that, like, you know, there were these moms that would work a lot with their kids, but they wouldn't tell you.
What do you mean?
Like, when I tutored my kids, or when I worked...
Oh, right, right.
I would say I did 6 hours of math with this kid. Well, not six, I wish. But there'd be moms who wouldn't talk about it. There were moms who thought it was wrong to do that. And there were also this kind of, are you feeding your kids organic food? It was so novel to me.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that people often tend to forget is that I didn't grow up here. I grew up in India. And I think for me, it would have been easier if my mother had moved here and raised my kids and I just stayed in banking. I could have stayed separate. I could have had that divide. But I had to, I fully came in. It was, I found it very hard. I also think that I really suffered. Prior to being in banking, I was doing a PhD. And in order to pursue that PhD, I moved from Canada to England, to America. Before that, I was studying in England on a scholarship. I was a doer.
You are, I was going to say.
So my whole sense of who I am, my whole sense of self-worth was based around achievements.
Mm.
And when you stay home with children, children are not there to make you feel like a high achiever. They're there to shit in their pants after you get them ready.
Make you feel like little shits, isn't it?
Well, I mean, and so I think that's that. I didn't know how to feel. I was like, yeah, but then what is my worth?
Yeah.
And there is no doubt that that was devastating to me because I thought my worth can't be. Everyone is raising kids. That's not extraordinary. And I think I've learned the hard way that there was a lot of pressure, you know, growing up to get good grades and do well and.
Mm.
Make something of yourself. That was always what they might
see. You know, a lot of people are not. There's any just in being just a mom.
There's none.
A lot of people are just happy, but I think for us, whether it's you know, I remember doing a course, and one of the things that came out of it is all these affirmations, and it was about writing. And one of my affirmations is, "I'm happy when I create," and that's just. Who I am, but it's
I didn't
not,
even know that was a thing.
Yeah, you didn't even
know.
But what I learned from that course wasn't just about writing. It might be that for other people, it might be being a really good gardener. Just some people need that other thing. Like, but my mum, and I wanted to talk to you about your mum, if you don't mind, because I know you lost your mum, because I lost my mum as well, longer than you, and I'm still. In bits but I remember when she was dying and she didn't really know she was dying. That's another podcast. And we decided not to tell her because she was happy in a little world, and it was a decision we made, us sisters. But people talk about all these things that you can, like, you know, you think, oh, what are you gonna ask? But of course I'm not gonna ask her like anything. You're not the reality, and Gemma will know because Gemma lost her dad to cancer as well. You don't want to scare them. I didn't want to scare my mum by asking her these life-ending questions. But I was like, what do I want to? And one day I did say to her, I said, "Mum, if you know, like in your life, if you you know maybe not had kids for whatever reason, which is just unfathomable to my mum, and she had four daughters."
Yeah.
I said, "What would you have done?" And she just completely looked at me blank, like she went, "I don't know."
Exactly.
I didn't want anything else. She didn't want anything else. And that's also to do with her culture, and that she didn't come from a background as well that was like education was encouraged. But she honestly, and then when she got older, she could have done other stuff, I guess, but she didn't want to. She enjoyed then looking after her grandchildren. She loved. Yeah. She, I think if my mum had been anything, if she couldn't have had children, she probably would have adopted. And she would have, or been a nurse teacher, because she just loved children.
Yeah, I hear that. I think, you know, I think it's so important to, I feel very lucky to have gone through things that forced me to figure out who I am. Outside of all, see, I come from a culture of enormous pressure.
Right.
I almost had an arranged marriage. Which would have been fine, because they're not forced. They're like, you go on a date with a guy and you say yes or no, or he says yes or no. And if he says yes, you're screwed if you don't like him, because then you have to say yes as well, kind of, sort of. But, you know, I mean, it should come as a surprise to nobody that, you know, that Indian culture has a lot of pressures on women and on men. And in my kind of families where parents work, there's a huge pressure on women to grow up, get married, have children, and then do something career-wise.
Okay.
That's the thing. It's like, well, what else are you doing? Especially with a mother like mine, who became a therapist when I was 16 and started the first nonprofit drug and alcohol rehab in North India.
Wow.
So for her, it was like, you know, she was, and this was drug and alcohol in India, which is so taboo.
Mm.
You know, she really turned AA programs into something, blah, 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 blah. Mm. So there's a lot of those pressures. And I think, I don't think I'm any less pressure-y on myself now. It's just that I kind of know more about myself. And I always wanted to have kids. Always.
Okay.
Yeah. And I didn't intend to be a banker. I was doing a PhD in philosophy.
Wow.
But my PhD was taking a long time, and it became very clear that if you wanted to get tenure track work in the US or the UK, if you had an Indian passport, you really, no matter how good you were at your PhD, or you were kind of lower down on the list just from a logistical point of view. You know, it's hard to get sponsorship to get work papers. And so that made me very scared. I was 25. I was young.
Wow.
And I was like, I became very nervous for my future. And my mother said, well, you should come home and get married. And I was very much in my slag phase. So I didn't want to go home and
good
get
phrase.
Married. Love that phase so much. So I had to come up with a way to become 100, because I'd always been financially independent, because I'd only studied on scholarships, but wow. I had to find a way, if I didn't want to go home, to live in the West and be financially 100% independent with no ability to take loans or anything in a way that my parents would approve of.
Right.
And so that was banking.
And a bit, so they were happy with that job?
Yeah. Well, because they were like, my mother said, well, I think whole life you will be spinster, but at least you will not be poor and die of hunger. And I was like, okay, good. Because they were like, well, who's going to take care of you? Well, at least if you have a good job and you can save money, you could take care of yourself. I mean, at 26, my mother was like, well, you are not on the shelf. You have fallen behind shelf, behind cupboard.
And dare I ask, what did she think about you getting into comedy?
Oh, she loved that. Well, you see, that's the thing is.
Did she think it was a hobby?
No, she thought it was great because when I got into comedy, I'd had a marriage. I showed that I could stay in the marriage. As my mother said, do not behave in the way that husband will leave you, because you are very stupid. She said this to me all the time. Why are you fighting with him in a loud voice? He will leave you because you are being bitch. Like, that's great advice, Ma.
Okay.
I say, well, what about him? What if I leave him? She said, why will you?
Cindy, I also have a therapist mother who says the most bizarre things. People fucking pay you money?
I said to her once, you know what? The way you talk, I said as a therapist, you should be in jail. And you know what she said? No, the way you are disrespecting me, I should be in crematorium. I was like, okay, fine, you win that one. I would rather be dead. Anyway, so, and so I got married. I showed that I could stay married, and I had 3 kids. And then I started comedy, and my mother was like, oh, okay, fine, you know, whatever. But then one day I was doing a gig in India, because I could go to India with 3 children and leave them with my mother and then go and gig. And stand up.
Lovely.
Yeah, and stand up was at the time sort of, really starting to
blow up in India. Yeah, there's a lot of stand-up in India, yeah.
And so one day she came and she watched me on stage. And
oh, wow.
And she used to always come to my gigs, all the time. My mother came all the time. She came all the time, and she would laugh and listen. And she would say, oh, you're so funny, and see people laugh and stuff. And then one day she came, there was 3 people on the bill, and it was a big gig. And she watched me, and then afterwards, she said to me, you know something? And I said, what? And she said, tum yahan ek cheez ho, tum stage pe dusri cheez ho. Which means, here when you're with us, you're a person. But when you're on stage, you're another person.
Mm.
And she said, I was watching you and I was thinking, this is what this girl is meant to do.
Oh, wow. That is so lovely.
Yeah. She said, so I know. And she said, so you...
I'm very emotional today. I might cry.
please. I've been, listen, man. I mean, I don't know how people don't cry thinking about their mothers and their children all the time. Not for necessarily good reasons, but you know what I'm saying? So I think when she said that, I looked at her and I said, really? You think... Cause I wasn't sure. I said, really? You think I love stand-up so much? And I said to her, really? You think so? And she said, I don't think so. I know it.
Hmm.
And then she said something very interesting to me. She said, put your head down, do the work, and have no doubts, because you are going to go so far, because you have found what you love to do. And I think that was really powerful coming from her, because my whole life she had told me, you should do this, you should do this, you should do this.
Right.
See, but again, listen to the thing she said, put your head down and do the work.
You're right. So the philosophy, in a way,
was always there. Hard work.
Always
she didn't say, oh, you're talented, sit back and enjoy. Like,
yeah. No. You just say, it's all just going to come to you easy now.
Well, now go and be the best, Sindhu. Yeah.
And I mean, I remember calling her once and saying, you know, oh, I think, you know, it was like 2016. And it was 2017 and I took Iguana Mum to Edinburgh, and I just didn't quite have the, I didn't have the wherewithal to do a whole hour, and there's a lot going on, and I was getting a little bit like, I said to her, you know, I'm going to do 40 minutes. I'm going to do it for 3 weeks. Is it going to be any use? Like, you know, people were like making big posters of themselves, and they had, you know, they were doing all this stuff, and it was actually the year before, because I had no agent, and people were writing to agents and this and that. And it was the year that I did the BBC final for comedy. And I said to her, you know, I don't have an agent. And I was like really in my head about, you know, am I doing it? Like, do I need to do more than just gig? Like, I think I do. And my mother, she listened to me, and she said, she asked me what agents do and what they don't do and why do they come and this and that. And then she said something to me. She said, you have to do your part. And if you love what you do, that's all you should care about.
Yeah.
And the rest will take care of itself. And I said, what do you mean? And then she said to me, and I think I've said this before on a podcast, I don't remember, but I think it's so valuable. And it really shows you how I was raised. My mother said to me, Karat karat abhyas ke jadamat hoye sujan, rasari avat jat se silpar pade nishan. So how do you translate that? Karat karat abhyas ke, by practice, janamat hoy sujan, the root of your being learns how to do the thing that you're practicing.
Yeah.
Just like on a stone well, when you have a rope and the rope pulls the water up and goes back down and pulls the water up and goes back down. And by doing that back and forth, the rope makes a mark on stone. That's how powerful practice is. You make an impact through your practice. I mean, if a rope can cut into a stone.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah.
So then she said to me, imagine what you can do in comedy if you put your head down and do the practice. Forget everything else. So she had the same attitude, whether it was my comedy or anything else. It was like, just do the work.
Just do the work.
The rest is out of your control. Just do the work. And I think, so... You know, I think when I first quit my job and I was at home, I didn't have an arena in which to... Children are not there to make you feel good about yourself. No. That's not their job. And if you're coming from this high-achieving...
Because I do get fed up with posts that are people, you know, sort of saying, you make me feel like I'm a better person every day.
Oh, please.
I fucking hate those posts, because my kids make me feel like a shitty person.
But also your kids are there to be alive and live and breathe and grow. They're not there to do things for you. Do you see what I mean? So, yeah. I think it was so hard for me to know upon which thing should I put my energy of achievement.
Mm.
And that was what I think really that I really lost my way in those middle years. Of course, when I had two kids, I had no fucking time to think.
Yeah.
You know, and I spent a lot of time in India. Just sort of, I mean, when you're with family and cousins, then you're not really worrying or wondering about anything, you know?
No, that must have been hard, not having a lot of family around.
No family. Yeah, but my parents used to come and stay a lot and this and that. But I think it's difficult sometimes that there are phases in your life where you don't know, where you have no roots. You just kind of, you know, you're like, oh, now I have roots. I mean, my children feel English.
Yeah, okay.
They literally feel English. And right. Which is fascinating to me. I'm like, oh.
Right. Oh.
You know, and just today, there's a picture we took at breakfast because I eat mangoes. It's the summer and a lot of mangoes from India at the moment. And my son is eating baked beans. I'm eating mangoes with my hands. Kid is sitting in front of me eating baked beans, fried eggs. And I said to him, look at this. And he said, bro, it's a good breakfast. He calls me bro. Bro, it's a good breakfast. And I said, I know, but this is so... I said, this is England and this is India. And he said, and they're both great. And I'm like,
you're right. Oh.
But you know what I mean? So I think for me, I now have roots. My children have given me roots here.
Oh.
And my comedy has given me roots. But I also now have my own self.
Mm.
You know, I know... And I guess that just goes to show that banking had no claim on me.
No.
It was a utility, you know.
Mm.
I don't think people can understand sometimes. I just couldn't have not done it that way. I would have disappointed my parents so much.
But I mean, we say it a lot on this show, and I know it's a cheesy word, but it was part of your journey. And
well, I mean, yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, you only feel, I didn't have a choice. Like, what was I going to say to my parents? I'm 28. I'm not married. I don't have a PhD. I'm going to come home and sit on your couch. Oh my God. I would have died of shame.
I did a bit of that,
but for my parents, it would have been like, oh my God, you know, what are you doing?
I think my parents were the complete opposite and could have done with a bit more being harder. My mum was too soft and didn't push me enough. But
you're great. And she's, you know, and look at your relationship with her.
Yeah, I miss her a lot. But she never saw me live, but she saw, but a lot of that was into was because I did a lot of my material was about her because I had this, I felt sort of quite unique upbringing with her, which is enough. Story for another day. And so I was always embarrassed. I didn't want to come where I'm literally...
Oh, all my shit was about my mom, and she would always
And
she would jump up at gigs. Well, she would jump up at gigs and say, yes, I said that. You're right.
Did she?
And she would sit down.
But my mom did see a video, and all she did say at the end was, I was like, what's she going to say? She just went, oh, aren't you brave? That's what she said. We've got to wrap up.
But we didn't talk about anything to do.
We didn't talk about anything to do with the crisis. But do you? Okay, we'll just. Gemma, you can start. Do you think you are ready for the third stage of recovery of this crisis?
Yeah. Gemma's
saying no.
Why?
Why, Gemma?
I'm like this. I don't know.
I think we're still in the second regression. I think we're still
uncertain. How many regressions are we slated to have here, man?
No, so it's emergency regression recovery.
Oh, so we're in regression phase two.
We're in regression. So the second stage is we realise the future is uncertain. Lose sense of purpose. Get tired, irritable, withdrawn, and less productive. And I think I'm sort of in that, but I can see a glimmer light of the recovery. That's how I feel.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that's in do? Is that how you feel? We've got to get used to the new normal. We've got to get used to that we're going to wear masks in supermarkets and gigs aren't going to happen how they used to be. And they're going to be on Zoom and they might be in parking car lots.
Yeah. I think the thing that I find the most daunting is the economy and how people are going to make a living who really needed to be in a space with other people. So given that comedy is taking place on Zoom a lot, I feel like we're going to adapt.
Yeah.
As long as people have a need to laugh and we all still talk and the technology exists, thank God this is not 1980 where there was no fucking internet.
Wow. As my sister said, I said, "What we've done for the internet?" She went, "We'd be dead."
Straight up, just dead. So that's what I mean. So I feel like there's going to be massive adaptation. And I think human beings, if there's one thing we do, it's adapt.
Yeah.
You know, although why we don't have webbed feet yet, I don't know. But
that would help in our recovery.
So I don't think, yeah. So I think that, and that thing I said earlier about recovery, where I've picked one thing and I'm going to stick to that. And I'm going to not think about the rest.
Yeah. But that's good. That's you. So the, you are ticking the box of begin to focus on moving beyond us just getting by. And so you're right.
Yeah.
We always ask at the end, what, if you could have a child-free night out, what you would do within reason. It's, you know, it's not fantasy, and say up to three things. And Gemma will ask, first of all, our standard question. Gemma, would you like to ask?
Sindhu, have you ever been in a helicopter?
Yes, I didn't.
I knew you bloody would. Come on.
I didn't want to, but I went on it. I didn't want to because my husband, we went to Grand Canyon and he wanted to go in a helicopter. And I cried because that's what I'll always do to get my way. I'm the youngest in my family. I cry.
Youngest as well.
Yes, I said this, that, because helicopters crash all the time. See, in India, there's a couple of temples that are very high up in the Himalayas and rich people take helicopters. They always fucking die. I mean, when I was growing up, my mother used to say, "You want to die? Sit in a helicopter." It's like a way of dying, you know? Helicopter, I hated it, I cried. My husband was like, "You're panicking, there's nothing wrong." And he's a Viking. He's like, rah, everything's fine. So we went and we saw a lot. We saw the Grand Canyon in a great way. But I was literally saying my Hindu prayer. No, I said my Hindu prayers the whole time. The whole time. And the kids were like, the pilot thinks you're weird. You're brown and you're whispering under your breath. What the hell are you doing? And I was like, shut up, all of you racists, my own family.
God.
So, yeah.
So okay, that's so you won't be going in a helicopter night out. So, okay. No. So take us. Where, what are you eating? Who are you going with? Are you dancing? Are you...
This is going to sound crazy, but if I could have a night out, I would go... So it would start like 7-ish. I would do a gig at 99 Club and then a gig at Top Secret.
She's going to do a gig! I love it!
I would do that like back to back. They're so fun. You run from one to the other.
You're and the first person that said okay,
no. I mean, I love that. And then get out of Top Secret, go into Soho, and there's a place that has noodles called Tonkatsu, and I would meet my husband there.
Lovely.
Meet my husband there, and we'd have noodles, and I'd tell him about my gigs, and he would mildly ignore me. And I would say, "I think you're ignoring me." He said, no, I'm listening. But he would not be listening, really. But he would be saying, yes. And then we would walk home. And I would always say, "We have to go this way." And it would be the opposite way of which we have to go. And he would say, "You have no sense of direction." And I, you know, we'd have that same conversation. But then we would hold hands and walk home.
Oh,
that's what we do.
So this, is that because it's locked down? You're just hampering to do a gig?
No.
Or that's what you do it? Oh,
I mean, if I'm going to stay in London, that's really the, I really love gigging.
Yeah.
And I think it's impossible for me to state how lucky I feel that I came to it.
But you can do it.
In this lifetime.
Yeah,
because you know, you don't think with three kids in your 40s you're going to find the thing that your mother says, "Oh, this is what you were meant to do."
No. And there is our voice bite for this podcast. Oh, thank you so much. I am going to have to go and have that bloody gin now.
I fucking rambled. I don't know what I said.
It was beautiful. It was so good.
There was no jokes. There was no punchlines. It was just blah, blah, blah.
We have found that these have gone very deep. And I don't know if it's through a Zoom or a lockdown or what it is, all those things.
But I think this one I really dug into because you asked me that really good question. You said, "Well, what were you doing?" You know, and I thought... what were those years like and what was I doing? And it was just searching. But you're not really allowed to say, when you have two lovely kids and your husband can work and you don't have to work and you don't, and you're not desperately struggling in any way, you're really not allowed to say, I don't feel okay.
Yeah.
You know, even if a lot of things in here are not okay, you know, if it's what you seem like on the outside, you're supposed to be like, oh no, everything's great. Look how lucky I am, which I was in many ways so lucky, but hadn't.
It's balance. And now you've got the balance.
Thank you so much for this.
Thank you. Is there any, so first, any women, if you didn't get the note on this, don't worry.
I did get it. On any unsung women.
Yeah, anyone that, you know, you think should be
a famous person.
Well, I mean, if they're unsung, then not famous, I guess. But who, or anyone you just, it doesn't have to be a comedian. It can be just a woman who's great.
I went to school in a convent in Lucknow in India. And I was 11 years old. And my mom had had a car accident in America. And everyone else in the accident had died. And she'd lost her memory and lots of crazy shit. She would, whatever, bad things had happened. But she'd come out of it. And I had to fly to India because the only thing she could remember was me.
Wow.
And so the doctors were like, it'd be great if she came. Because if this doesn't, you know, whatever. So my father decided that I should go to America. And I was to take a train. I was 11, alone. He had to travel for work, my father. So I was to take a train from Lucknow to Delhi, where then my father's friends would pick me up and put me on the flight. But the train went very early in the morning. So I had an English teacher called Miss Firoz. She was very, very small. She wore very high heels, and she was Miss Firoz, and she was an English teacher at the convent. And I don't know how it came about that my father spoke to her, but Miss Firoz took an auto rickshaw early, 4:30 in the morning, came to my home. She was unmarried and was clearly, from what I know, what I knew even at 11, she was a spinster. Spinster, my mother used to call them spinsters. She came, and I'd always stood up in her presence because it was a convent, and she taught us Shakespeare, and she taught us Wordsworth. And she came to my home. Wow. She never spoke. I sat in the car. We went to the train station. She put me on the train. And she looked at me and she said to me, Sindhu, I want you to know that you are a very capable girl. And you will always do what you need to do. You will always do what you need to do. You're a very capable girl. And she put me on that train and I left and I went to America and this and that. The reason I want to point her out is I think there were a lot of things in her life that were not working. Mm. But she was one of those women, you know, those teachers that is able to look at a student and make them, give them this, like empower them. She was in a very conservative society. Things were not working the way she should. I'm sure she got a lot of flack from that society. And yet she was able to empower me at the age of 11. Not just for that moment, but for the future. The way she said, you will always be able to do what you need to do.
And that stuck with you.
And that stuck with me because she could have said, take care, be careful. Don't talk to strangers.
It's a dangerous world.
Yeah.
She could have said anything that made me feel like that made me not feel strong and confident and powerful. She chose. And you know, that's a humongous thing. I'd never been alone anywhere. I took that train,
bless you.
I took a flight from Delhi to Frankfurt, waited in the airport, then went from Frankfurt to Washington, D.C. I was 11. So,
wow.
But I mean, everyone, like I had that thing, you know, you have where you're unaccompanied minor.
Like Paddington Bear.
Yeah. And by the way, all the stewardesses were terrible. Sit there, do this, do that. But I was fine. But I would talk back to them in their accent. The German, the Stanza lady did not like it at all.
And what was her name? Do you remember? What was
Miss Firoz.
Miss Firoz.
No, Firoz. F-E-R-O-Z.
F-E-R.
O-Z-E. Firoz. I know it's not a famous person, but as a mother of two daughters, I understand how important it is. There are really key moments where you can affect a child's little journey.
Yeah.
Not literal journey.
Yeah.
You know? And I think there's so much of this, be careful, don't do the wrong thing. All of that's important.
Yeah.
The way she said, you're a very capable girl who always do what you need to do. I don't know, there was something about it that made me feel like I was good. I'd be fine.
And that stuck with you.
Yeah.
Well, all preps to her.
Yeah, and also big props to teachers, you know. A good teacher can change.
Especially at the moment, we are...
Yes, oh my God. By the way, all teachers listening to this, I always thought you were great. Now I think you're so much greater because not only do you take these kids all day, you manage to fill their brains with information and knowledge without threatening them. Because I know you don't threaten my kids. English teachers don't threaten the kids at all.
I had a teacher say to me, and it's the opposite to what you've had Zindu, where now I used to see it as negative, but now they said to me once, Hattie, you often take the easy route in life by playing the clown. And I used to be really depressed by that, but now I'm like, yeah, I am a clown, thanks.
Yeah, I am actually.
And if that's an easy route in life, I'll have it, thank you very much. You've been listening.
You're like, oh, how dare you call me a clown? Smell my flower. Right? Yeah.
Exactly.
And look at me now. Wah, wah. If only I'd had the confidence to do that time. I just sat there going, I think they said something negative to me. And then I'm like, go away. And then like years later, realise like, yeah, fuck them. I'm making a living out of being a clown now.
Yeah. But I still think these teachers, they take these kids all day and they actually teach them math as opposed to just threaten them with math.
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling to me.
Oh, no, don't.
Mind-boggling.
Right. Thank you, Gemma Beagley.
Thank you.
Thank you, Cindy V. Thank you, me, Hattie Ashdown. Thank you for listening to the Funny Mummies podcast. Don't forget to keep listening and subscribing and sharing. It's the only way people can find us.
Patreon.
And, oh yes, I forget. We are now on Patreon, which is why we are doing this. We are on Zoom so that if you want to see us on visual version, you can, and it'll just be for you. But we haven't got a tit out or anything, don't worry. I'm going to say goodbye to...
I thought you said we have a tit out. I'm like, oh.
I'm going to say goodbye to them, but you don't have to go. 1 minute. So bye-bye. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Funny Mummies podcast with me, Hattie Ashdown. Thank you to my panel and guests today. Edited and produced by Scott Kingsnorth, in association with Screaming of Laughter, the lunchtime comedy club where babies can come too. These shows go out live on Soho Radio for the Other Woman Show. See schedule for details. Please subscribe, rate and review and share this podcast. We really appreciate it and it's the only way more people can find us. So see you next time for more Mum and Tonic.
Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.